Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heat, and Cooling and Electrical Game Studios. And, of course, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Hal Gill joins the show now. Hal, Predators are on a two-game winning streak. That's good. And at this point in the season, every game matters. Every point matters. Where this team is right now, fifth place in the Central Division, what is your overall thought on where this team is right now and where they go moving forward?
Well, they're finding ways to win. You said it. That's what you're looking for. Get points any way you can. So they'll take that, but it's been goaltending that's been bailing them out in the third period. So, if you want to win consistently, they've had good starts. They just need to find ways to get to that next level where they're finishing teams off and instead of battling right down to the end, killing penalties at the end and blocking shots and getting big saves from their goaltenders. So they need to take that next step, but this is going to be a good test tonight. St. Louis, 1 point behind them, in similar situation, I think. Both these teams are fighting for spots, so this is going to be a huge telling sign of who can raise their game to the next level.
Yeah, an important game at St. Louis tonight, and a team kind of in a similar situation. I think both teams, both the Preds and the Blues, went into this season thinking they wouldn't be in this situation on the outside looking in of the playoffs. And you mentioned it, the goaltending is red, red hot. But Hal, I fear that when the goaltender, whether it's Kevin Lankinen or UC Saros or whoever it is in net, isn't red hot or playing lights out, this team can't win games.
Well, I think they have the recipe to get wins. They just need to be consistent over the 60-minute span. I feel like they show signs of a lot of the action off the rush. They can make plays off the rush, which they haven't been known for doing in the past. But I feel like that game has come around where these young centers are making plays and they're extending time in the offensive zone, and that's the best way to go about helping out your goaltender is spend time in the offensive zone. They did that to start games. It's just at the end when teams are pressing, they're having a hard time with that execution, getting it out of the zone, getting stops in the D zone, and then moving the puck out. That's been their challenge. And, you look at young centermen, what they can do. Yeah, they're skilled and they're making plays, but it's a big ask. There's some good teams that the Preds are playing that can work in the offensive zone, and that's tough on a young centerman. So I think they're getting there. They're learning how to get stops, but it's been a challenge at times. And so good goaltending helps. Great goaltending is great, but you need to find ways to win games with just good goaltending. And I think you're right. That's the challenge for this team right now.
Well, luckily, Hal, the Predators have one of the best goalies in net in UC Saros. leaning on him isn't quite a bad thing to lean on him. But you mentioned some of these young players that are playing well. And you know this better than anyone else that, listen, hockey, like football, is a war of attrition. And whoever stays healthiest the longest tends to be there at the end, especially if you got good players. Is there any worry that these young guys, even though they are playing well at this point of the season, that they will potentially wear down toward the end of the season?
Yeah, I think the good part is with John Hines, the way he's had the line set up, they're spreading out the minutes. They're not asking guys to play over 20 minutes at Ford. Everyone is right around the 15-minute mark, and that's good. I mean, that allows guys to play fresh, and as the season goes on, and don't forget, they were playing a really hard physical game last year, and that's taxing as well. Right now, I think they're using their speed more. They're not asking guys to go out and bang bodies on the forecheck. They're being smarter about the forecheck, playing faster. So I think that'll pay dividends as the season goes on. But I go back to the young centermen. They're doing some good things right now. Novak and Parsonen and Glass, they're playing well. Now you need the other guys to step up and get contributions from the guys you'd expect to, you know, Johansson, Forsberg, Niederreiter, Duchesne. If these guys can turn it up just one more notch, then they're getting that extra goal. They're getting that goal that they're looking for. Instead of a 2-1 game, you're looking at a 3-1 game, and it changes the whole complexity of the game. And so right now I think you spread out all the lines, but at some point you're going to need big guys to step up and play big.
Now, Raleigh is out for the Blues tonight. How big of a hole is that for them?
Yeah, they got some injuries. Krug out and Tarasenko, and O'Reilly is obviously a great centerman, the leader of the team. So, yeah, that's big. This team has been hurting. From what I've heard, Berube is changed around the line. So, we'll see what they decide to go with. But it's, it's a team that's struggling right now and having some good spells and bad spells. So I think this may be a good time to catch the Blues, because we know this is going to be a physical, hard game. It always is. We're just hoping that the Preds can get out there and find a way to take advantage of some of those injuries.
Hal Gill is with us. Hal, you mentioned the word, and I've heard it so much about this team, and it's consistency, or maybe lack thereof. David Poile was on Robbie and Rex Road a couple weeks ago. He talked about that he expected this team to be a little bit more consistent, that this team just needs to find some consistency. How do you find that?
It's tough. I think you got to rely on certain things you do well like the forecheck, if they can get pucks in, first of all, that I think they are better off the rush, but if the forecheck can set the tone for games, and you can rely on that. Say you have a 5-minute span, teams are going to push. You're going to have to give up something at some point in the game. You just got to be able to stop it. Realize that, hey, this isn't the time to make the cute play. Realize that they have momentum going their way, and we need to turn it around and put it back in their end and work our forecheck and keep it simple. And I think that's the hard part. You're looking to try to get scoring and, of course, get the next goal every time, but you got a sense when the team is pushing and make the simple plays. And I think sometimes their execution isn't there when they need it to turn around the momentum of a game.
I want to talk about Elli Tolvanen. Of course, Elli Tolvanen in Seattle's kind of been lighting it up. 7 points, 5 goals in January alone. And his 2 power play goals so far since he's been in Seattle. He really struggled offensively with the Predators. The reason why he's in Seattle now. Did the Predators mismanage Elli Tolvanen? And if so, who's to blame for that?
Well, it's a tough one. He had opportunities to go out and do it. I think the change of scenery sometimes just helps guys, gets them over the hump and give them a chance to go out and do their thing. I think Elli, we know he's got a great shot, but it wasn't going for him. He didn't have the confidence, the mix that he was looking for wasn't there. So, he struggled. He played hard. He was hitting. He was doing all the things that they wanted him to do. He just wasn't scoring. The goals that he was getting last year were off deflections, where he was playing hard and working, but it wasn't the snipe that we've seen and we're watching him do now. So I think just the change of scenery maybe got him over the hump and got him some confidence. But, it's hard. I don't think it was mismanaged. It's just sometimes it works out for a player. And we've seen it a lot where you go to another team and things weren't going well, and all of a sudden they turn around. And, the Preds waited a long time, and I know they didn't want to lose him, but with the cap and the way everything was working out, they had to move someone, and it ended up being Elli Tolvanen. And so you want to get good players and you want to keep good players, and Elli is a good player, but it just wasn't working here in Nashville. So I think he's a great kid, and I'm happy for him. I wish it happened with Nashville, but he's on to change of scenery. He's doing great things for him.
Hal Gill, we appreciate you. Have a good call tonight.
All right, sounds good. Enjoy the game, guys. Cheers.
All right, chat with you next week. Again, Hal Gailey normally joins us on a Wednesday with the breaking news with Rand Carthon yesterday. Moved him to today. Appreciate Hal Gailey. Again, the Predators in action on the road at St. Louis tonight. Puck drop is at 7 o'clock. We'll have all of your pre- and post-game coverage here at 102.5 The Game. But coming up next, a new name that's been floating around with the Tennessee Titans. How do we feel about it? We'll get into that coming up next. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
We're all confused about Denver, right? Nobody can figure it out. And I said earlier today is that when you – there's no precedent for, like, being really a good quarterback. I mean, if you go look at the passer rating of Russell Wilson, it was like 105, 106, 106. Whether you think he was regressing a little, he's not the worst quarterback in the league suddenly. So a lot of us are saying, you know, there's no precedent for it. It must be Nathaniel Hackett. It's just like acting. The great actors, they get scripts. They pick the scripts they think work for them. Lamar Jackson, Tom Brady couldn't run that offense, but Lamar may not be able to run the Tom Brady offense. Like, even for the most talented people, like Lamar Jackson, Tom Brady, for the most talented people, you have to build stuff around them.
There you go. That was Colin Cowherd a couple months ago on the Denver Broncos offense, which I don't think it's any mystery to people with eyes and to people who have watched a single second of Denver Broncos football that the Denver Broncos offense is horrible. So that's why I was a little bit surprised when I saw some news from Tom Pelissero coming down last night. A tweet from Tom Pelissero saying the Titans have put in a request to interview Broncos offensive coordinator Justin Outen for a job on their new offensive staff. Per source, Outen called plays for Denver the last two games of the season, previously coached tight ends in Green Bay. Before we get into Outen's resume, what we think about it, This tweet is interesting. Because it doesn't say that the Titans have put in a request to interview Broncos OC Justin Outen for the Titans' open offensive coordinator position. It says for a job on their new offensive staff. So if it was for the OC position, I feel like they would just say that.
Yeah, you would think they would. And to be fair to Justin, obviously they, you know, the last two, they end up firing Hackett. And he ended up being offensive coordinator the last two games of the season. And their offense looked a lot better.
It did.
The last two games of the season. So was it more Hackett than anybody? Or does, you know, Justin have the ability, you know, to call plays? And in the short span of two games, he showed you that, hey, listen, you know, had I been called in plays, this is what it would have looked like. But it's not a big sample size. It's a very small sample size. So are you bringing him in here potentially to be your offensive coordinator with such a small sample size? Or are you bringing him in here to be a part of the offensive staff like you did Tim Kelly last year?
And that's what I don't know, is if they were interviewing to be OC, Tom Pelissero would have said to be OC.
Exactly.
Or the Titans would have said, we are interviewing him to be our next offensive coordinator. And so you might ask, why would Justin Outen be interested in this? And I don't know if he is or is not. I haven't seen that Justin Outen has or that the Broncos have approved the request to interview Justin Outen, or if Justin Outen has, you know, decided to move forward with the interview process. But you may ask, why would Justin Outen go from being an offensive coordinator to an offensive line coach, something that the Titans do need, an offensive analyst, passing game coordinator, whatever it is? I think that Justin Outen kind of sees the writing on the wall. He was brought into Denver with Nathaniel Hackett. Obviously, Nathaniel Hackett has been fired. I doubt Justin Outen would think that he's going to be retained by this next coaching staff. I'm sure the next head coach wants to bring in his own guys to be coordinator. So I'm sure that's the reason why he would be interested is probably not I'm going to have a job moving forward. So I'll just go ahead and interview or look into any opportunities that I can get. So it could be OC. It could. I feel like they would say if it was OC, and they didn't. It could be offensive line coach. It could be any sort of, you know, offensive role on this staff. But I look at Justin Outen's resume, and you make a fair point about the Denver Broncos. Was Denver's offensive issues Nathaniel Hackett? Remember, Nathaniel Hackett didn't call plays in Green Bay. He was Matt LaFleur's offensive coordinator in Green Bay. Matt LaFleur called plays in Green Bay. Nathaniel Hackett obviously gets the job in Denver because I think Denver was going all in to get Aaron Rodgers. That fell through. They get Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson looks like a shell of himself. Is that because of Russell Wilson? Is it in his regression? Was Russell Wilson really just a product of Pete Carroll and the weapons around him in Seattle? Is that a due to a lack of weapons in Seattle? Or, excuse me, rather in Denver? And he didn't have a great pass-catching core, didn't have a great offensive line. So is that the reason why Denver's offense struggled so mightily? I don't think Justin Outen was the reason why this offense struggled so much.
No.
You mentioned the last two games of the season. They played Kansas City close in the second to last game of the year. They beat the Chargers 31-28, and all of the Chargers starters played in that game. You know, Justin Herbert was in that game. Mike Williams was in that game. So it wasn't like the Chargers just brought all of their starters and were playing their B team in the final game of the year.
Now, they could be, and I'm not saying this is why they are bringing him in, just, you know, doing the homework and seeing, you know, his coaching stops. You know, he did, for what it's worth, because they did fire their offensive line coach, for what it's worth, he was the offensive line coach. Granted, it was a part of his head coaching duties. Assistant head coaching duties and offensive coordinator duties, but this was him in high school. So does he have some familiarity with, you know, coaching offensive line? Because what happens in this league, one year you can be a receivers coach, the next year you can be a tight ends coach, the next year you can be an OC, the next year, you know, if we go with another guy, he can start out as a, you know, quality control guy, then end up being the tight ends coach, then segue that into an offensive line coach, and then, you know, so forth and so on. So these guys that are coaching throughout this league are not tagged to just one position. Now, when you become a coordinator, typically you remain a coordinator wherever you go, unless you're just not doing a good job, and then you sort of get demoted at your next stop. But typically these guys and girls that are coaching, they typically move around from position to position unless they've had a lot of success at one position. Mm-hmm. So they could be, frankly, bringing them in ultimately as their offensive line coach. We don't know, because they said offensive coach. You know, so what does that mean? Is it the offensive line? Is it the running backs? Well, it wouldn't be the running backs, but would it be another position on this coaching staff? What is it going to be? So, you know, it may not be the offensive coordinator position, but then again, it may be. It may not be the offensive line position, but then again, it may be the offensive line position. They just hadn't said.
And if it is, let's say it is OC, and we don't know that. It didn't say that explicitly.
Exactly.
I would think if it was OC, they would say it explicitly. So maybe it's not. But Justin Outen, you know, looking at his resume, came from Green Bay. So he runs this Shanahan West Coast system, the same offense that they run with Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. He came from Green Bay, but also Matt LaFleur called this plays. And also, it's really easy to make an offense look pretty good when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. So I don't know how much say he really had in the offense in Green Bay. If I had to guess, I would say probably not very much. Goes on to Denver. Nathaniel Hackett is calling plays. The offense looks atrocious, and Justin Outen takes over the last two games of the year. Things look better, but Justin Outen doesn't come from this line of offensive gurus. He doesn't come from an Andy Reid or a Kyle Shanahan, and not that you need to, but I just look at Justin Outen's resume, and it doesn't stand out to me as a guy that I look at, wow, you know, this is going to bring, you know, this is what this offense really truly needs. And to be completely fair, I don't know if anybody felt that way about Arthur Smith either. I don't know if anyone thought that he was going to be the key that just unlocked Ryan Tannehill to look like a potential MVP candidate. But just based off of what I've seen, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very short resume.
Yeah, it's a short resume, but I do probably believe, just according to the tweet, the fact that it doesn't explicitly say offensive coordinator, it's likely not for OC. But he does run the system. He does come from the Shanahan tree. Let's get to your phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mark's up next. What's up, Mark?
Good afternoon. Hey, the Ravens have just accepted the resignation of Greg Roman as offensive coordinator. And I think it behooves the Titans to take a serious look at him, as he has a strong running game and offensive line history in Baltimore, Buffalo, and some other places. So I'll just sort of hang up and listen to your comments from there.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Mark. I did just see that.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Roman does not run the Titans offense in Baltimore. The offense that Greg Roman runs in Baltimore is very Lamar Jackson-centric. If you don't have a Lamar Jackson at quarterback, that offense isn't going to work. And looking at Greg Roman's resume, I mean, that offense in 2019, was that the year that Lamar Jackson won MVP?
2019? Yeah, I think so. 2019. Yeah, I think it was 2019, 2020.
That offense
might
was
have been 2019.
Unstoppable.
Yeah.
Absolutely unstoppable. And, of course, last year.
It was 2019. Because he was AP assistant coach of the year or something like that.
So that offense was wonderful. Lamar Jackson was balling. And then last year, they deal with injuries. And then, of course, again this year, Lamar Jackson on and off the field. Tyler Huntley is in at quarterback, at least for the latter half of the season. I hear you, but Greg Roman doesn't run this offense. I don't know how much experience he does have with the Shanahan offense, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
But with the offensive coordinator, whose offense only declined since he was there, and an offensive coordinator that doesn't run this system and was very, very quarterback run heavy and so hyper-specific to Lamar Jackson, I don't know if it would be the best thing for the Titans to bring in an OC when they don't have a quarterback to match.
Yeah, it would be tough if indeed, you went that route with Greg Roman. Now, listen, these coaches, again, like I said, they're versatile. And if, you wanted to run, whatever offense, I'm sure that he would put in the work to make sure that he can, run that offense in a way that it will flourish, whatever it is. I think that whole situation in Baltimore ultimately boiled down to you just didn't have one, your quarterback is injured. That's the main thing. But then you don't have true legitimate weapons on the outside. And in a league that is so pass heavy, you got to have playmakers on the outside. And they just didn't have enough. They had Andrews, who's arguably the best, tight end in the league or second best.
Lamar loves him.
Yeah, because he knows that's that's the only guy that has proven week in and week out, play in and play out, that he's going to be there and show up. They didn't get him enough of that on the outside for whatever reason. But I'm pretty sure if Mike Vrabel said, hey, Greg's our guy, we're going to bring him in, I'm sure that the offense could be tailored around whatever quarterback or personnel you have. That's just, ultimately that's just the way this league is. You come in with an idea, you look at your roster, and then you either tweak that idea, but you make it fit the players that you have. Mm-hmm. Because it's easier for me to sort of look at my talent and say, okay, let me put together my offense based upon my talent than the other way around. So I'm not saying they're going to hire Greg Roman, because I don't think they are.
Mm-hmm.
But Greg has had a stint with San Francisco 49ers, but that was before, I believe, Kyle Shanahan had got there. That was with Harbaugh and the system that they ran, and they were successful.
Mm-hmm.
They went to a Super Bowl with that system. He was in Buffalo. So I don't think they would, hire him in this capacity. Where he goes from here, I don't know. But it's just like anything. You have to, when you come in with a new system, you got to make sure you got the players that can run that system. And like you said, mm-hmm. if he's bringing that system here, man, it's going to, you can run it, yes, but it's going to be tough, to run it, because you don't have the quarterback that can run this, and not the way that Lamar ran it, so to speak. So.
And to the caller's point about the offensive line, the mm-hmm. Titans need a better offensive line, need a stronger offensive line, absolutely. I don't think that's necessarily a result of the system, but just a result of they don't have the talent.
And I think Greg would do great as an offensive line coach, but that's like a demotion. If somebody else is offering you an OC job, then why would you take an offensive lineman job? It's just taking a few steps back in a sense.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to get your thoughts on that, where the Titans offense goes from here. Again, they have requested to interview Justin Outen, Denver Broncos offensive coordinator, for a position on the offensive staff. And that's all the information that we'll get, so that we've gotten at least. So back into your phones coming up next. Plus, what does D-Mace think this offense needs? We'll get into all of that coming up next. And, of course, your phones. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game.
It all starts with the ball. My philosophy is you got to win the ball. You win the ball, you win the turnover battle, you win games. That's the first and foremost thing. The ball is everything. The second thing is getting 11 guys on the field, playing fast, physical, and having relentless effort. That's extremely important. And all being on the same page. Having a fine balance between the run and the pass game is extremely important. Keeping the defense on their toes. And lastly, making things all look the same to start out, but end up playing up differently. So they're just making sure they're covering every inch of that field.
There you go. That was Justin Outen, Denver Broncos offensive coordinator. Again, per Tom Pelissero, the Titans have requested to interview Justin Outen for an open position on their offensive staff. No more clarification beyond that. Could be OC, could be offensive line coach, could be...
Hell, he could be just getting Vrabel's lunch.
Yeah, offensive, you know? Coffee getter.
Exactly.
Yeah, offensive Mike Vrabel's best friend.
Exactly.
But he was kind of laying out his offensive philosophy there. Win the ball, play fast and physical. You want a healthy balance between the run and the pass game. Those things the Titans didn't have offensively this year. They didn't have a good balance between the run and the pass game. They didn't play very fast. Physical, I will give them credit for that. Didn't play fast. That's what the Titans need, more speed. And then winning the ball, winning possession. D-Mace, as the Titans start to conduct their offensive coordinator interviews, what do you think the Titans need to prioritize in bringing their offense into the future?
Okay, it was interesting just listening to Justin talk about certain things in regards to offense and what you're looking for. All being on the same page. Everybody, coaches, players, we all need to be on the same page in regards to what we want this offense to look like, how we want this offense to progress during the game. How do we identify our playmakers? In identifying my playmakers, how do I then get them the ball? Balance. We must have balance. I'm not saying 50 run, 50 pass, but there needs to be some type of balance. Balance in this league is, hey, if you want to go 60% run and 40% pass, or 55% run, 45% pass, let's do that, or vice versa. That's balance in this league. It's not always 50-50, cut middle down, because once you're in a game, you're not thinking, okay, throughout the season, man, we've only ran like 350 pass plays. We in 250 run plays. We need to get this up to closer to the 350, 400. No, you're calling plays based upon your personnel and based upon how your players are, progressing in this offensive scheme. So balance is key, but balance is not always going to be 50-50.
It's not, running it 85%
exactly.
of the time on first down.
Absolutely. And then him saying, making it all look the same at the start. That is key.
What does that mean exactly?
That means this. And because from a receiver standpoint, this is what, as my career began to progress and watching other receivers, great receivers, and really studying them, how they run their routes and everything else. The one thing I noticed... And the one thing that I was told early on, make every route look the same. The way you come off the ball on a hit, a nine, a curl, a in, a out, I don't care if it's 5 yards, 2 yards, that first step should always be the same. And those first two steps should always be the same, because if they're not, a really good defensive back will pick up on that very quickly. And they know when you come out of that huddle and get on that line, they know exactly what you're running. But if you come out the same way each and every play, whether it's a run or a pass, and you take two hard steps off the line of scrimmage like you're running, now they don't know. They don't know if I'm running a nine. They don't know if it's a run play. They don't know if I'm running a hitch. They don't know if it's, we're just downing the ball. They don't know because of what I'm doing. I'm making everything look alike. That's what Justin is saying at the beginning. And this is what we have been saying for the longest. In this league, there's only so many offensive plays you can run. But I can run them in different variations. I can run them out of different personnels. But at the start, they all look the same. You don't know. It's hard for you to get a beat on them. Why do you think defenses wait so long to get into their coverage? Why? Because they want to make everything look the same. And they want to try to make you make a decision based upon what they're doing right then and there instead of what they will be doing. The good quarterbacks figure it out. The bad ones don't. And that's what he's talking about with offenses. We want to make sure that when we bring out 11 and line up on the field, and whether it be in different formations, everything looks the same at the start. But then as things start to progress, it becomes different. But now it's too late for the defense. Now they got to read and react. And a lot of times when they're reading and reacting, one person might get something wrong. And that one person that's getting something wrong might end up a touchdown, 60 yards down the field. So for me, when you bring in an offensive coordinator, first, you have to be able to – I want to know what he thinks of my roster, my offensive roster. I want to know what he thinks. What can he do with this roster, the personnel, offense, from an offensive standpoint? What would he need to enhance this offense based upon what he wants to run? And does the philosophy of what he wants to run fit the philosophy of the team? We know Mike Vrabel, fast, physical, we gonna be in your face the whole game. Well, we can run an offense like that, and it doesn't have to be turn around and get a ball to Derrick Henry 90% of the time. We can still be fast and physical. Fast doesn't necessarily mean speed. That's what people get mixed up with when OC say we want to play fast and physical. It doesn't necessarily mean speed. It means I know exactly what I'm doing. I don't have to think about it, and I'm just going. Because I know what I'm doing. I've studied long enough that I know. It's like having a test. I know this test now. I get it in front of my face. It's not going to take me 2 hours to do this test. It's going to take me about 45 minutes to do this test because I've done the work. That's what an offensive coordinator needs to do. You don't have to be a 4-2 guy or 4-3 guy, but you better know this offense. So when you step out on the field, you can play fast. Not speed-wise, mental. Fast, knowing what to do, knowing what the defense is going to do. Study your defense. I can play fast. When I'm not studying, when I'm not doing the things that I need to do, now I'm hesitant. I can't play fast. I can't go out there and do the things that I need to do. So those are the things that I think an offensive coordinator needs to come in. And the players that that this offensive coordinator's system, he needs to have the players that match that system, or he needs to be able to look at the players and say, hey, listen, this guy works. I can fit this guy in the system, this guy in the system. I can tailor my system a little bit to what this guy does, but we're going to need maybe a quarterback, or we're going to need, this guy at tight end because it works better over the years. I've noticed that maybe a faster tight end works better here, or a bigger tight end works better in this situation. So if we can get those guys, then this offense will flourish. That's basically what I'm looking for. A guy that can come in and assess the talent that we have, look at it and say, this is what I need, and make sure that once I get in this building, that everybody understands what's going on from the head coach down to, the running backs coach and anybody else on offense. If you have anything to do with offense, you need to be on the same page with the offensive coordinator and his philosophy on what we need to do to be a better team.
And in terms of play calling, whenever, the names are thrown out, let's say, the Justin Outens of the world, I look at it and I say, it's a really small sample size of calling plays. I don't really know how that makes me feel. But then I look at, let's say, Todd Downing, for example. He was the offensive coordinator and calling plays with the Raiders before he came to be a tight ends coach with the Tennessee Titans. Arthur Smith was the tight ends coach with the Titans and was promoted as the offensive coordinator, didn't have a vast history of calling plays. So when you look at some of the candidates that are going to be coming down the pipe, that are going to be interviewing for this offensive coordinator position, does a history of calling plays, considering how much Todd Downing really struggled with play calling this past year, does that change your thought process or your belief in their ability to call plays for this offense?
Listen, you got to start somewhere. In this league,
right.
It's you can't always go for the experienced play caller in a sense. You would love for that to happen, but even the experienced play caller sometimes may not be good for your the roster that you have or the roster that you want to build. An experienced player, that particular one or person, may not be right for your team. And that young guy that maybe has only called a season or maybe has only called, you know, two games, say Justin, for instance, you've only really OC'd two games, but those two games look really good. So if I do indeed, say if you hire me or want to hire me as an offensive coordinator, well, I'm going to look at those two games and then I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions and see, as a head coach, I want to see what your vision is moving forward. Does it match the vision that we have for this organization? Can you usher this offense, which seems like it's 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years behind just about everybody, or at least 5 years behind the teams that are competing right now in the playoffs? So what are you going to do, or what can you do to make sure that you know, this time next year, we are one of those offenses that people look at as being innovative, that's being creative, that knows how to use their personnel, identifying your playmakers, and not only identifying your playmakers, but getting them the ball and knowing how to get them the ball, and then identifying who your role players is, knowing when to put them in the game and when not to have a Swain in the game, or, you know, a fourth string receiver in the game at a critical time.
Things that shouldn't be happening.
Well, no. We're not doing that no more.
We're not throwing the ball to Jeff freaking Swain anymore.
Exactly. We've moved past that. We are ushering into a new way of playing football here in Nashville. So all of these questions need to be asked of the new, and to me, it doesn't necessarily have to be the experienced guy. It could be a young guy with a very creative mind, an innovative mind. And once I sit down with him as a head coach and he start designing things and he show me film or situations where that particular play worked and whatnot, and I'm looking like, oh, okay, this kid got something. Let's see what he can do with this roster. So you want to give a guy like that a chance. And when you do, just like McVay, somebody had to give him a chance, you know, be OC then and then a head coach. And look what he has done with it. Kyle Shanahan's the same. Somebody had to give him an opportunity to call plays, and he segued that into a head coaching position. They're doing great down in San Francisco. So if the guy is creative – and the guy is innovative, and he knows how to work with a roster, then you hire him.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. I see your phones lining up. We are right to those next. Plus, the Titans are following a pretty exciting trend set by the NFL. I'll explain why. Coming up next, Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
Hey, everyone. Harry Kane here. I'm here at the home of Spurs, and the location for two of the 2023 London Games. Lucky for you, I'm here to announce the designated teams for next season. So without further delay, let's get into it. To play at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, the one you can see behind me, get loud for that Bills Mafia. I can't wait to hear the noise. It's the Buffalo Bills. And the second team, and bringing King Henry, it's the Tennessee Titans.
It's always fun to hear King Henry in a British accent. We found out this morning the Tennessee Titans will be heading to London in 2023 along with the Buffalo Bills at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in the 2023 season. And in 2021, when the NFL decided to expand this season to 17 games, it's required that at least three teams every year play overseas, or there are at least three games overseas. That's the contract, and especially considering the expanded schedule. So these trends that I'm showing are a little bit different now, considering that there is now a certain requirement set by the NFL and a certain requirement in terms of the international games. But the Titans going to London, I think, should be very encouraging. There could be some fun things in the works in Nashville. In 2016... Yeah. The Texans and the Raiders played in Mexico City. That was 2016. 2017, you know where the Super Bowl was? Houston. Mm. 2017, the Minnesota Vikings and the Browns played in London. You know where the Super Bowl was in 2018?
Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. 2018, Titans played in London. Where was the draft in 2019? Nashville. Mm-hmm. 2019, the Raiders played in London. The draft in 2020 was supposed to be in Vegas. That was the COVID year, but supposed to be in Vegas. 2020, obviously nothing, COVID. 2022, Arizona played in Mexico City. Where's the Super Bowl next month?
Arizona.
It's in Phoenix. So I think we can be excited that that could potentially mean there's a since there's a new stadium being built and the Titans are trying to make nice with the NFL, say, hey, we'll go to London.
Hey, Buffalo getting a new stadium, too.
Buffalo's getting a new stadium.
I don't think anybody wants a Super Bowl in Buffalo.
Hey, it's good. February in an outdoor stadium in Buffalo doesn't sound great to me.
Exactly.
And it is now a requirement that with the 17-game schedule that every team in the league is eventually going to have to play overseas. But the trend is encouraging that when teams play overseas, you could look at a Super Bowl or a draft potentially being played in the next coming years, because Kansas City played overseas in 2019. The draft is in Kansas City this year. So it's almost like, hey, you know, going overseas isn't the easiest thing for us. NFL, we'll scratch your back if you scratch ours. We love a draft. You had a great time in 2019 in Nashville. Hey, we're building a new stadium. Should be open in 2026. We'd love a Super Bowl. Remember when we went to London in 2023? Oh, yeah. We'd love a Super Bowl in 2026. So that's exciting and encouraging to look forward to. Hope everybody has fun planning their travel plans to London.
Yeah, I might go to that game.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly. I got enough time to plan it.
We're going global.
Exactly.
Let's get back into your phone. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have a thought, anything is on the table. Rand Carthon, his relationship with Mike Vrabel, the offense moving forward. But one texter texts in, Salmon Franklin says, is our new general manager the guy that scouted Trey Lance? Any chance that we go after him with Brock Purdy seeming to lock it down as the starting quarterback in San Francisco? Just a thought. So this is the tricky thing, is we don't know. We don't know who it was, because Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco has final say. So if Kyle Shanahan wants to go after Trey Lance, what Kyle Shanahan says goes. So, I mean, everybody else in that building could have said, no, we're not trading 3 first-round picks for this guy who came out of North Dakota State. We're not doing that. It could have been all Kyle Shanahan, because Kyle Shanahan obviously loves Trey Lance. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it was Rand Carthon that said, hey, you know, you might want to look at this kid from North Dakota State because he is awesome. He could have loved Trey Lance. We don't know the answer to that. But the encouraging thing is, if the Titans, or if let's say if the 49ers just, you know, go to the promised land with Brock Purdy, they say, we cannot move off of Brock Purdy. He's our guy. He's our quarterback. We're going to have to trade Trey Lance. That's if that happens. That's a big if. Now the Titans have a clear path to pursuing Trey Lance, because Rand Carthon knows exactly what he's good at. He knows if he's going to be worth the picks you inevitably are going to have to trade in order to get Trey Lance. Rand Carthon knows Trey Lance. So that would be the path to Trey Lance.
Yeah, obviously there's a path or connection to Trey Lance, and you know, whether they would want to even, you know, breach that situation at trying to bring him here to Nashville. But, I mean, listen, San Francisco right now is in a wonderful space, meaning this. Both of their quarterbacks at this particular moment, both of them that will move forward with the organization, both of them are under rookie contracts. And both of them together are probably not making over $10 million or $12 million right now. They're not. So the San Francisco 49ers are in a good position, because it's not like they're paying, you know, Trey Lance, you know, $20 million a year. And then if they release him, they take a cap hit, or they're playing Brock Purdy. They're paying him a lot of money. They're paying both of these guys based upon their rookie contract. So they're not going to be in a hurry to make any decisions with Trey Lance. Now, Rand Carthon, does he know Trey Lance? Absolutely he does.
Oh, yeah.
Did he scout? I'm sure he was a part of that whole scouting of Trey Lance. Everybody, I think, has to be on board at scouting when you're looking for your franchise quarterback. I think everybody needs to be on the same page of what we want in that quarterback and how we're evaluating them. So I'm sure he had a hand in that. But San Francisco is not going to And I would be really surprised if they were. But I don't think San Francisco is going to be in any rush to give away Trey Lance. Even if Brock Purdy takes them to the Super Bowl, I don't still think they're going to be in a rush. They're going to take their time, do their due diligence, and whoever comes up with the best package, then you get Trey Lance. I'm just not going to send him to Nashville just because Rand Carthon has a – has a relationship with them. So I'm going to give them away for 2 second-round draft picks. Oh, no, 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 no. Everybody, send your envelopes to me. Let me open these envelopes and see what y'all are offering. But until then, it's not like we have to move on from Trey Lance. Again, we can keep him. Just because what if, you know, Brock Purdy does take it to the Super Bowl, whether we win it or not, that's a side story. But he comes back the next year and we name him the starter and he gets hurt. First game of the season. Guess who got hurt first game of the season last year?
Trey Lance.
And then Jimmy Garoppolo. And they were lucky to have Jimmy Garoppolo. Mm-hmm. And then they were lucky to have drafted Brock Purdy. They don't want to be in a situation where they can't look back and lean on a quarterback. You know, a quarterback that they believe that can take them to the Super Bowl. So if Brock Purdy gets injured, there's Trey Lance waiting on us. He was a starter before. We believe he can be a starter again. So I don't think they will be, just because Rand is coming here, they would be like, oh, my goodness. Yeah, Rand, what do you want to offer for Trey Lance? And then, you know, Rand is like, listen, I need to come in and assess this roster first. I don't need to be thinking about guys I can bring in right now. As I come, I need to assess this roster first, see where they're at, see what Mike Vrabel is thinking with the quarterback. And if he wants to move on with the quarterback, well, I have a history with Trey Lance. I can possibly say, hey, listen, we're interested. What would it take for us to have Trey Lance on our team? I think more than anything, that's the way it would probably go. I just don't think now that Ray Rand's the GM that, oh, Trey Lance is more likely to come. I don't think that's the case. Me, again, it's just only me. Go out and draft your quarterback. Let everybody be in the process of evaluating your quarterback, and let's go draft one this year.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We're talking to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. Coming up next, it's Caroline Willie Demes, 1025-1063 The Game.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.